Yeah, I was given the opportunity to give a talk on the Sangha, and at first I balked a little bit. I think I might have whined about it a little bit myself, but I finally came to the realization that it was a real honor. And it's probably the jewel of the three jewels that I can connect with quite readily. I decided to do it, so it's good to be here. Before I start, I wanted to mention a couple things. One was about Damarati's talk. The one takeaway I had about, one of the many takeaways I've had about Damarati's talk was when he mentioned that Praticit Samutpada can be verified in our own experience. And for me, that makes it a very real, when the events happening in my life can be measured against what the Buddha has said on a very simple level, it makes it a basis for confidence. And I've heard a lot of Damarati's talks, and I have a name for them now. It's called the Crystal Bell of Clarity. So when Damarati gives a talk, it's bing, and I pay attention, so thank you. many years ago, Bhante visited Ariyaloka. And he came in with his entourage, and I believe there was Kulananda was here, and Gunapala came in for some reason, and it's just a bunch of people, and Bhante was down in the solitary hut. And I happened to be a mitra at the time, and I was over with the men, and someone said, dinner's ready, and could you go down and get Bhante, please? I said, sure, I'd be happy to. Scared to death. Walked down, it was in the fall. It was cold, and it was dark. So I walked down with a flashlight, knocked on the door. Sangharakshita comes out, and he was concerned that it was a bit chilly, so he had to put on a jacket. And in the sort of the flashlight, fumbling in the dark down there, he was having a problem zipping up his coat. So I have the distinguished honor of saying that I helped Sangharakshita zip his coat up. So we're walking back, and I had nothing to say to this man. I was really in awe of him, still am. And I said, Bhante, we're really a brotherhood, aren't we? And he said, oh yes, this is a brotherhood. And that was it. And the rest of the night was, Bhante sort of quietly eating at the table and everyone else being very quiet, and then all of a sudden someone would start conversation and he'd say a few things, and that was it. But I remember Bhante zipping his coat up, and that's something that I won't forget. I'd like to open this talk with a poem. It was given to me by, this book was given to me by a friend of mine who is in this photograph, and I'm going to pass this photograph around. And you will be able to identify the folks in here, I'm sure. His name is Adarsha. He's over here. And every morning at Gihyaloka, he would sit out after breakfast in a chair in the sunshine, and he would read from this book. And when we parted, he handed this to me. He said, I want you to have this. So pass this around. And if you turn it over in the back, you may see a few other people that you recognize on the back of that photograph. So this is a poem by William Stafford, and it's called The Way It Is. There's a thread you follow. It goes among the things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread. But it's hard for others to see. While you hold it, you cannot get lost. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you can do will stop time's unfolding. But you don't ever let go of the threat. Brothers, in reflecting on my life story and attempting to write a talk on the Sangha, I couldn't really separate the two. They were just inseparable. And for several mornings, I would find myself in meditation just spontaneously weeping. And you might have heard me sniffling in the background. And you grab a shirt and start grinding, you know, the whole thing. And you wonder where they come from. You know, we think we're in control and the mind is the primary organ and we're in charge, but then there's something more powerful than that just comes up. What I've discovered there were tears of appreciation and gratitude for all the people in the past 20 years that has offered me the hand of friendship. And it comes in a lot of different forms, a lot of different people. So part of this talk towards the end is going to be just some anecdotes about my own experience in the Sangha and how it's been helpful. One of the powerful parts of being involved in the Sangha is spiritual friendship, as you know. And oftentimes you don't know where it's going to come from. And if we're closed off and we have our armor on and our swords and shields up, you may miss it. So I would recommend, especially as this retreat goes forward, if you find somebody on this retreat that you may find that you don't have anything in common with, or you may be intimidated by them, or you just you don't really know what to say, I would strongly urge you to go for a walk or have a cup of tea. Challenge yourself as well as them. Because I firmly believe, and I've had the experience, that there is a timeless quality in friendship. And there is a selfless quality when friends become really connected. So I've dedicated this talk to Sangha Rakshita. When we go into the shrine room and we recite the refuges and precepts, and we say Bhutang Saranang Gacchami, Dharamang Saranang Gacchami, Sanghang Saranang Gacchami, in some way I hope there's a heartfelt connection, that it's not just by rote, and it's not formalistic because everybody else is doing it. And I don't want them to think like I'm not following the path here, so I'm going to walk up. And when I walk in the shrine room, everyone else is bowing down in the shrine, so I'm going to do the same thing. And that's okay, I guess. But I think there's a deeper meaning to it. If we really, I sometimes imagine walking up that stairs, you're entering another realm, and I don't even want to know which direction the driveway is or where my house is. I really believe we're entering a place that's can be timeless. Yeah? So when we say Sanghang Saranam Gacchami, we're going to refuge to the Mahasangha or the Arya Sangha. And Subhuti says in his Buddhist manifesto, all those men and women down the ages who have gained transcendental insight, only they can be fully trusted as infallible sources of guidance and example by virtue of having seen the way things truly are. And as you know, practicing the Dharma is not easy, especially because it cuts across cultural norms. You know, I can imagine, when I was younger and I was interested in meditation, and my family of origin, and saying, gee, I'd like to meditate, and I've actually practiced it, and I'm sitting in my room, and something's happening. And if I went up to my mother and said that, she says, you're sitting in your room? Get out and mow the lawn! What are you doing? So in a sense, this Sangha, we have created a Sangha by coming together here, because we support each other's awakening. Yeah? So again, Subhuti says, we need companions on the path who can encourage and support at every stage. And I would again encourage people, and I've seen it happen many times, Sangha night, a newcomer walks in the room. It's like a deer in the headlights. You can tell them a mile away. That's the person you need to shake their hands. You need to make them feel welcome. And not just for 5 minutes. They may need a little assistance. Show them the library. Show them where the, you know, show them around a little bit. Make them feel welcome. I came in my first retreat here. Can't remember when. It's a long time ago. Came with my now ex-wife. And the first person I met was Paramashanti. And it was late at night. We came in late because our car broke down on the way. Paramashanti was obviously exhausted. But he took the time to very kindly and mindfully show us the entire building. The library, the kitchen, you know, the whole thing. And I've never forgotten that. In fact, Paramashanti is still quite a deep connection for me. I have roots in England. One of them is Paramashanti. So an act of kindness, maybe only be 20 minutes, can really change a person's life. And this happens within the Sangha. This is what Sangha is about, helping others to become awake, helping others to see Pratichit Samutpada. If a new person walks in the door and you start babbling about Pratichit Samutpada, you probably won't see him again. So there's an appropriate response to everybody along the way. The Sangha is also a test tube for us, a place where we can practice Buddhist ethics. And we're going to make mistakes. We're going to offend people. We're going to make people, we're going to say things that probably aren't skillful. But this brings in another part of friendship and the effectiveness of Sangha. Is, are you willing to admit that you've made a mistake and actually confess to someone? I'm sorry, I apologize. On the other hand, it behooves us to point out to someone that perhaps they said something unskillful, and you have to be willing to enter into a dialogue with them. And I will be so bold as to say, order members are not perfect if you hadn't known it already. Okay, get this one really quickly. And don't be afraid to challenge them. If you see a couple of order members that are acting unskillfully, and I know this is going to be challenging and difficult, but if you can be appropriate about it and you have enough confidence in what you're doing, and you do it appropriately, you can call somebody to task. Yeah? Because this is going to strengthen the Sangha. Probably get in trouble for that one. That's okay. So Subhuti also says, confessions allow us to face up to and overcome our unskillful actions. How else are we going to know? How are you going to move forward if you don't correct things? Otherwise, you get stuck. This is the way it should be. I'm not going to change. You're the one that has to change. We're right back into group mentality. Mm. 1996 was my first men's retreat, and I met a lot of really cool people. It was not easy. I came in head of household. People were supposed to be paying attention to what I say in my family. You know, I have all the answers, and I'm the father, so on and so forth. And I came into this retreat, and there was 33 men. I'm probably repeating this to some of you. It was in the winter time. There's a lot of snow. There was 33 men here, 32, 33. Half of them were order members from all over the world, some very strong personalities. I won't mention who they are. But they were what I brought to this retreat in terms of my conditioning didn't work. It didn't fly. It just wasn't going to work. The people, you know, I had something to say, and this is important, and people would listen, but it's like it wasn't their language. You know, I had to learn and start from square one. And there was one man, particularly that I'll tell his story. His name is Ratnotra, and I believe he lives in Richmond, Washington. He's an Anagarika, and I was having kind of a rough time, and I said, geez, don't know if I could hang around here. And he says, well, he took me for a little stroll out somewhere. And he says, what he does, he doesn't care if he knows anybody. He'll fall in love with every single person on the retreat. Just because, he doesn't need to know anything about them really, but because they're here, he will go right to this person who's a lovely person. He said, that's gotten him through a lot of hard times. And I've used that. Because if you can allow yourself, and I don't mean in a sexual way or boy, that guy, whatever. It's just, you're opening yourself up to the other person. Right, and you're sort of truncating your own ego. What's ego, or this or that? You start looking for the faults in people. That's going to shut you off from the group. So it's this process of opening and opening. And if you're not used to it, it can be very uncomfortable. But it's very powerful because you really get to know people that way. And that's oftentimes what the life stories are about. Am I courageous enough? There's an old saying. The thing that I'm most ashamed of is the last thing I'm going to tell you. But can we at least approach a sense of vulnerability and expose ourselves to each other so that we can really see what that person is? And then we get to know each other. And you have this communication that happens, which is often nonverbal. And we have a lot in common. So I've got another little reading here. Does anyone have that picture? Yeah? Damarati actually took both those photographs. Did you see, catch the guys in the back? Yeah, a few years ago. I'll get to these guys in a minute. So this is from Bhikkhu Bodhi's book, in the Buddha's words, and it's under the heading of The Happiness Visible in This Present Life. And it's in Worshipping the Six Directions. I think something's been mentioned about it on this retreat once already, but there's one I wanted to repeat. There are five ways in which a man should minister to his friends and companions as the northern direction. By gifts, by kindly words, by looking after their welfare, by treating them like himself, and by keeping his word. And there are five ways in which friends and companions thus ministered to by a man as the northern direction will reciprocate. By looking after him when he is inattentive. By looking after his property when he is inattentive. By being a refuge when he is afraid. By not deserting him when he is in trouble, and by showing concern for his children. In this way, the northern direction is covered, making it at peace and free from fear. I found that interesting that you watch out for your friends when they are inattentive. How do you know that a friend is being inattentive? You have to know him. You have to be with him. You have to understand him. You have to spend time with him. You have to communicate with him.
And you have to be attentive.
Pardon?
And you have to be attentive.
Well, yeah, sure. Mindfulness. So, this is my iBook, by the way. Very cheap. You don't have to plug it in. If you don't like something, you can throw it away. You don't have to push the delete button. So the next part of this is going to be some individual sangha, sort of anecdotes of the people that I've come across that have helped me over the years. I'm going to start first with a man called Dhyaratna. He led me into the Dharma. He offered me a meditation. He's been a friend of mine. I can talk for the next hour about the man. But I'll tell you a couple of stories about him. When we were doing classes, one of the first classes I went to, he was he said, "I'm not the best Dharma teacher, and I'm certainly not the best meditator, but I can be friendly." And to me, that's a lesson about being honest and being open and knowing your limitations. And one day, we developed a fairly strong relationship. We were working together at times. He'd come over to my house when we had the farm and help me muck out the cows, and I'd eat dinners over at his house with Nancy, who is now Shudasara in Dairatna, and help him work in his house. So there was a real great relationship going on for several years. And one day, a member of the Sangha, which I didn't know, his name was George Long, was ill. And Dairatna knew he was ill, because he was in contact with the Sangha. I didn't know he was ill. And Dairatna and I were working in a little town called Searsport, which is a bit north of Belfast, Maine. And it was my job, and he was working with me, and I picked him up in the morning, and we're driving to work. Now, I've got this, ask Paul, he'll tell you. I've got this sort of very strong work ethic that I'm trying to slow down a bit. And when you get in the car, we're going to work, we got to stop at the paint store, and we're going to work 8, 9, 10 hours, and we're going to turn around, come home, and maybe we'll eat lunch. And we get in the car, and Dairatna says, "Oh, before we go to work, can we stop and see George? He's not feeling well." Oh, come on. He said, you know, it'll only take 10 minutes. We'll bring him a cup of coffee. And he finally convinced me, and I'm like, okay. You know, I'm sort of like resentment and mumbling about the whole thing. And we brought George a cup of coffee. We spent 10 minutes with this guy. And after we left, I felt better. George felt better. And Dairatna was just like being Dairatna. But for me, the lesson was practicing kindness. Your schedule is not so important if you know somebody's sick. Take the time. 10 minutes? And that I was running directly into my conditioning. And Dairatna gently pointed it out. Here's another one. Buddhapalita. He was living in the men's community here. I was painting downstairs in the entranceway. And boy, I stopped by and I was going to help out down here. And I wanted to show these folks how people from New England work. And I'm up on a little ladder in there, I'm painting between the beams, and, you know, 3 or 4 hours later, there's people all over the building painting or doing something. And Buddhapalita walks through, "Well, it's tea time. You going to have a cup of tea with us, Bill?" I was Bill at the time. "But now I'm too busy, I'm going to finish this up. I'll show these guys, you just don't take breaks, you know, you just hammer away." And so Buddhapalita went around the whole building, and he comes back through to go upstairs to go to the kitchen, and he's being followed by a gaggle of 6 or 7 or 8 people. And someone from the group says, "Bill, you going to come have tea with us?" And Buddhapalita says, "No, he's way too busy." I'm thinking, yeah, that man knows what he's talking about. See, that's how you do it. And then about, you know, 5 minutes later, it hit me. He's being sarcastic. So once again, I run into my conditioning. And this is skillful means. It's a little sarcasm, but sometimes sarcasm works. But it was like you chip away, and eventually you start to see that, boy, there's certain things that I could change in my life, and other people are noticing this. But it takes an aware, awake person, more aware and awake than I am, to help point that out. Can you do that in a skillful way? So the lesson there is, take time out, connect with people, watch out for your conditioning. Next person is Shanti Nayaka, same retreat, 1996. He was one of the, Subhuti was here, Paramananda, Paramabodhi, Baladichu was here, Surakshita was here. Duma was here. It was just this really intense situation, and I was having a hard time again, and I couldn't connect with the Buddha Jewel. I didn't even know what was going on. And Shanti Nayaka, in his very quiet, simple way, he took me aside, and he said, "Well, what I do sometimes is Just imagine that the Buddha is with me, whatever I'm doing. I'm meditating with the Buddha. I'm making tea with the Buddha. I'm walking in the woods with the Buddha. And what would that be like? Being with the Buddha, in your imagination even. And that sat in my mind dormant up until about a year ago. And I've always practiced a certain amount of mindfulness in my daily off-the-cushion life, but bringing in the image of the Buddha then makes it a little more alive and more real. And I told this a little while ago, but coming down here on this retreat, it's like you have a reference point. Would the Buddha like to hear a little live cream loud? No, Narottama. In fact, I wouldn't even like to hear the radio. Okay. So you have this sort of check-in. And so that was another little teaching. So, in a sense, it's like, are you receptive and awake to what other people can tell you, and does it make sense? And I'm not asking you to just take it because someone's telling you this. Check it out. If it works for you, use it. If it doesn't, don't. Manjuvadra. This was a hard one to swallow, but he's good at that. Manjuvadra, I think it means beautiful lightning bolt or something. And it certainly was at this time. So I'm at some retreat, and Manjuvadra's at the table, and we're eating a meal. And I get into this little argument with a person across the way about politics or some silly thing. And I'm saying yes, and the other person's saying no, and we're having this, it's not heated, but it's enough to be a bit disruptive. Manjuvadra's, I'm here, person I'm arguing with is here, Manjuvadra's next seat over. And one of us, probably me, I'll admit to this, I turn to Manjuvadra and says, so what do you think? What do you think about? Who's right here? And he says, I'm not engaging with negativity. And have you ever seen those cartoons where after the lightning bolt hits, there's nothing left but this sort of smoking person that's like, that's what that was like. So we both just went, try to be as small as you possibly can. But what a lesson, We were promoting, we're sitting there just hashing over negativity. It was not conducive to waking up. It wasn't conducive to stillness. My conditioning just, I had to be right. And this other person had to be right too. And basically, we were disrupting his meal. So that was another one. So here's where we get into this fine young man right here, Adarsha. Mid-30s. I think his mom is a doctor, maybe in India, and his dad is or was a financier in London. He grew up in a very fortunate household. I believe he had servants. And when you go for a walk at Guhyaloka with him, it's like you're out here, and he'd always be a little bit ahead of you, This is the way he was brought up. He's very sort of alive and powerful. We all told our life stories when you first arrive at Guhyaloka. You're given roughly an hour. Each night somebody tells a story. And this is the one guy that I said, there's no way I can connect with this guy. He's just light years away from my world. It's just not going to happen. And one day I'm in the kitchen recently, after he told his life story and we were done with life stories, and I'm peeling carrots or something. And he said, and he walks right up about this far away from me. He says, Bill, he said, you seem to be one of the more interesting folks in this thing. He said, I want to try the old FWBO way of meeting every day and taking a walk and getting to know you. And I'm like, boy, this is going to be something. I'm like, I'm the next generation up. I'm 54, he's 34. He could be, my son. And I didn't have a whole lot of confidence that this was going to work. However, we connected so deeply that it was, he's still a very powerful influence in my life, but he died. Within a year of that retreat, I believe, he had a heart attack and died in the Mumbai airport. Gone. And that brings to mind this, it's like, do people ever really leave? You know, are they in? Are they out? Are they neither? Are they both? I mean, it's a mystery I'll never solve. But this guy really influenced me. And it proved to me once again that what I know or what I think I know really doesn't make any difference. I have no idea what the future holds, but can I be open and receptive to it? I don't want to be a doormat. But can I at least take the challenge? So that was, an incredible, incredible, powerful experience. And in a sense, it's allow yourself to love somebody else. You're worthy, they're worthy. Yeah? So the other person on here is Punya. And he was one of the, I think, original men that came over to help found Ariloka. And I didn't have a lot of contact with Punya, but every time I did, and he was on a few of these retreats, he must have seen something in me that needed a little help, because he'd always come up to me, and he'd look me right in the eye, and he'd take me by the hand, and he said, "It's going to be okay. You're doing fine." It's like, I thought I was doing great, but he could tell I was a little apprehensive, I was might have been anxious or whatever that was, but he was just incredibly kind and sensitive. And he's still there. He's still influencing me. What would Punya say in a situation like this? He might just say to somebody, "You're doing okay." You know, that little bit of confidence. There was another case where at the end of the retreat, Parma Bodhi came over, and we already reported out. I'm sitting on the couch feeling a little bit better, but somewhat isolated, you know, still. Parma Bodhi came over and just put his arm around me. He sat there, didn't say a thing. But it's like, it's these little tiny gestures that can move you forward and give you the confidence to take the next step. I'm going to move on to Naga Bodhi here. It's another one of those cartoons, sort of things. So Naga Bodhi and Manjivadra are holding a sort of a question and answer period after a weekend retreat or something. Any questions you wanted to ask them? And, you know, one of the famous questions in the FW book, or the old FWBO was, where do you see yourself in 5 years? So I thought I'd be a bit smug, and there was a few younger mitras there, maybe 2 months since they've had their mitra ceremony, so I thought I was, like, important. So I thought I was quite smug, and I raised my hand, and I said to Naga Bodhi, I said, "Where do you see the FWBO in 5 years? And he turned to me, and he said, "That's up to you." And I felt like, there again, and I felt like that cartoon where you just sit there and you had a cigar lit, but, you know, that's the whole thing is just blown up. And the lesson is, you know, you be careful what you're asking for and what your mental state is when you ask it. Because you're playing with Naga Bodhi. He's going to be kindly give you a thunderbolt and right between the eyes. But it reminded me, you know, it's like, who was I to be sort of smug to this guy? He's standing, he's being kind enough to be in front of us and answer these questions. So, you know, you're going to get nailed once in a while, and it's good for you. Or it was for me anyway. So those have been very important. the other one, one I wanted to mention, and he's in this room in Satyada. We have actually made an intentional friendship. Years ago I said, let's try to be friends. Let's work in this. Let's see what we can do with this. And it's taken a while. And how are we going to connect? Well, you've got text, you've got emails, you've got telephone, you've got Skype and all this other stuff. And believe me, it's so easy to go back to your own bubble and just sort of the retreat atmosphere fades and the people that you really like, I'm too busy and so on and so forth. So it takes effort. It really takes effort to pick up that phone and make a phone call. Our first phone conversations were like, "How you doing? Good. You? How's the weather? You know, it's like this painful sort of, and then after 10 minutes, it's like, okay, we'll see you later. But over the years, it's like, now we're talking, it's like, I got to switch hands, I'm tired, you know, and my jaw gets hurt, and after about an hour or so, we finally go, okay, that's enough, we got to get off. But what happens is you're opening up, you're connecting with somebody else, you have to make the effort to do that. And something happens. It's pratichit samuppada. What you put your effort into, you will get out. And spiritual friendship, and I hesitate to even call it spiritual friendship, but I do understand that there's a distinction between just the friends that you make at work and the friends that you have in your neighborhood. There is something different. We hold something quite deeply when we reach this level. You're either GFR mentors or order members, and that, you've made a huge commitment, and these are your brothers. Yeah? So it takes effort. And it doesn't mean we have to connect deeply with everybody on the retreat. It's almost impossible to do that. But at least have that sense of being in it together and being willing to work together and being open to each other and disagree and challenge each other. But can you do it in a skillful way? Gunapala. Some of you may not know Gunapala. Gunapala is... I think he was from New Zealand, and he was at Kihiloka for a long time. And I didn't know who he was. And this was just after I became a Metra back in the early 90s. I was working, cutting wood with Dairot on my farm. We had a chainsaw ripping along. We were stacking wood and throwing it in the truck. And Dairot says, a friend of mine is coming from Kihiloka. He's just gone around the world with a backpack from Spain east back across, and he ended up in Maine because he was setting up venues as he went along. And do you have any work for him? He's kind of looking for a place to stay for a while before he heads back to England. And I said, sure, I don't know. And so it's fine. And this way, at this point, I was pretty intensely involved in being a Mitra and studying the Dharma meditation. So anybody that I could meet would be fabulous. So this guy shows up. Never seen, he's another being. Never seen anybody like him before in my life. He's free. He's strong. I don't mean physically strong, although he is physically strong. But he was happy, buoyant, alive, and he just went around the world with a backpack. And I'd been living in New England for almost 40 years, and nevertheless, my furthest west I'd gone is Vermont. So it's like, wow, this guy is fantastic. And he's not married, he doesn't have any kids. He's like this free bird. And we spent a couple of weeks together working. And I was just like, this person is amazing. He was spontaneous and kind and thoughtful. And at one point, I wanted to spend a little time with him alone, so he had about a half an hour on a particular day between our schedules when we weren't working that I could go off and take him out somewhere. But he happened to find 5 hours to be with my wife. So I'm thinking, at one point, I'm just like, no, I want him to be with me, you know, and so there's this tension about him spending time with my wife, who was also a Mitra, and, you know, the schedules just were a little bit different. And we worked through that. And a couple of months later, he went back to Spain, and I got a postcard from him, or a picture from him in a letter. And he's sitting in this one of the little kutis, one of the little huts at Kihiloka, with this big, huge smile on his face. He says, it was really great. Thanks for the hospitality. Hope to see you at some point. So you get these people enter into your life, and they offer these things. And you have to, like, how do you meet them? What are they like? And I don't know where he is now. I guess he's in Scotland somewhere, but I'd like to see him again. So part of that lesson for me was share your friends. You know, don't be possessive about your relationships. Let people share each other the good parts. The last person is Alokadara, who I also met on the retreat in Spain. And I think we came to the men's retreat here, and I forget what year it was. It might have been 2009. We hooked up. We had spent 4 months together in the same hut. And the huts are about, I don't know, 12 by 15, two beds, not a whole lot of room, but enough. I think we were the only couple that didn't break up and separate over that retreat. We actually got along pretty well. Everyone else was leaving in the middle of the night with a suitcase to go somewhere else because they couldn't stand the other guy. I mean, it all worked out. It wasn't that contentious. I'm being a bit dramatic here. But Alokadhara is still a very good friend of mine. And we went to the one-year reunion retreat at Padmaloka. And we made this plan that he was going to come over and visit me for a month in September. And then we'd go to the men's retreat, the GFR retreat, which we attended. And then we're going to go camping up at Baxter State Park in Katahdin, Mount Katahdin. So he came over, and before he came over, he asked me one question. He said, "Are there any bears in the park?" I said, "Yes, there are bears." He said, "Are they a problem?" He said, "No, a bear will see you before you see them. They'll smell you, they'll hear you, and you'll never see him." He said, "Oh, okay, great. I'll come over. We'll go camping." So he came over. We went to the retreat. We set up the camping trip. We're driving up to Katahdin, which is 3 hours north of my house. It's pretty wild up there. And we pull in to this track that leads you down to the ranger station where you check in. And when you get within 50 feet of the ranger station, there's a sign: "Beware, bear watch." And he turns to me and he says, "You told me there weren't any bears." And I said, "No, I said they weren't a problem." He said, "Well, obviously they are." So we pull in front of the ranger station. We're arguing back and forth. I don't know what the ranger was thinking. But through the whole trip, he said, "Die, bears in this whole..." And so we finally worked that out. We didn't see any bears, but it was a bit tight at one point. Although one night, the last night we were there, and I have bear spray, which probably wouldn't do anything. The bear would eat that as probably a spice along with me. But the last night we were there, we were in this small little... by the way, these aren't just my personal stories. These actually do apply to spiritual friendship and sangha. So I don't think I'm getting off the track here. There's this, you have a lean-to, and it's open in the front, and you just kind of tuck yourself in, and you got mats and whatever you bring. And one night, 2 in the morning or so, we're sound asleep, and here comes this, you can feel it in the ground. And I don't know if you've ever seen a moose before. A bull moose, with like the antlers get about 6 feet across, and a male bull moose can be 900 to 1500 pounds, and they're not afraid of anything in the woods, and they're nocturnal a lot of times. And they don't bother tiptoeing through the branches like a deer will. Something's in the way. Right through it. So you hear this crashing coming, and we both sit up in bed, and we're sitting there with our little dinky flashlights, and I got my bear spray, and it's like, and I look at him, and he looks at me, and all you can hear is this moose plowing right through our campsite and up the hill, and we're going, he said, "Was that a bear?" I said, "No, it was a moose. Go back to sleep." And recently I spoke with him. He said, "Geez, I'd like to see you again." I said, "Well, you're going to come over to the States, or should I come over to England?" He said, "Well, I'll come over to the States, but I'm not going camping." But he's given me a lot too. He's a very dear friend, and he actually has pretty deep roots in the order over in England. So, another quote from Sabuti: "If the Sangha is a genuine Sangha, it will be a source of delight and happiness to all." How do we do that? The Sangha is essentially made up of individuals. And there's going to be times when it's not a delight. And we've all had probably hard times and contentiousness with folks in the Sangha. Are we capable of working through that? Owning what's ours and discussing it to the point where, you know, we can move forward. If we're going to work towards being awake and aware, we've got to work on ourselves. It's not somebody else that has to work on themselves, right? So, are we judging people? I've always thought it strange. I've given up judging people because I don't know myself that well. How the hell can I judge somebody else? Like, I just, it's like, It seems ludicrous to me. And I'm sure you all have your stories about people that have helped you over the years. It doesn't have to be the Sangha. It doesn't have to be in here. But you know what it's like for somebody to extend the hand of friendship. And, you know, acts of kindness go a long way. Just thinking of another person. So, closing. I'm going to... brought my friends along. I've told you about them. There's... I'm not sure what it is, but there, Shantideva, I believe it's attributed to, wrote a lot of the material that's in our puja. And there's something... I'm sure it's on a certain writing that I didn't bother to look up, so you have to take my word for it. But it precedes the going for refuge. And it goes like this. And this is something that it's in my face a lot for various reasons, and I wanted to pass this on if you didn't know it already. But it goes like this. The Lord of Death is indifferent to what has been done or not done. Like a thunderbolt, he strikes me down in health as well as sickness. For the sake of my likes and dislikes, I have done many unskillful acts. I have forgotten that one day I will leave this world abandoned and alone. What I hate will cease to be. What I love will cease to be. I will cease to be, and all will cease to be. Night and day, my life advances towards destruction. One day, I will surely die. So, this very day, I go for my refuge to the powerful protectors whose purpose is to guard the universe, the mighty conquerors who overcome suffering everywhere. Wholeheartedly, also, I go to refuge to the Dharma, to the who have the Dharma they have ascertained. Help me out here. Wholeheartedly, also, I go for refuge to the Dharma they have ascertained. Against the realms of rebirth, likewise, to the host of bodhisattvas, I take my refuge. So, all I can leave you with at this point is please pass it on. Thank you.